Attention, this is not legal advice. If you are experiencing a legal emergency, contact an attorney or your local public defender's office.
The views expressed by our guests do not necessarily reflect the views of Gin and Justice.
Talk about justice.
Hey, I'm Justine.
And I'm Amanda. And I almost forgot that we were recording a podcast.
Guys, we're so excited today to bring you, drum roll please, just kidding, you guys will already know by looking at the title of this episode, but whatever, a legal brief.
We're back.
Yay. So we have been able to push all of those wonderful interviews with people that we had because they talk about relevant issues, and so we wanted to get them out, you know, this year.
Yeah.
So and we have some great ones coming up, so keep tuning in. But I think we're gonna go back to our normal format of big episode legal brief exoneration episode, or whatever, however we usually do it. So
however
we usually do it. Our exoneration episode will be on Halloween this year, so.
And they are spooky, so.
Yes.
Makes sense.
Yep, they are spooky. My goodness. Well, so many things. First of all, this is the last episode we will be bringing you before my birthday. Just kidding.
I was going to say your birthday?
Yes, my birthday, but that's not what I was going to say. The Tampa Bay Criminal Justice Summit. Oh, yes. So that is on Friday and Saturday, the 20th and 21st in Tampa. You can get some information from the Florida Reformed Allied Partners, as well as Horizon Communities. And we will go ahead and put any links that we have for information in the show notes. Going to be a really awesome set of panelists, and they have a lot of really awesome speakers. Food can be included. They have released the actual ticket packages, so they're all pretty reasonably priced. We'll go ahead and link that in there as well. And we would post it on our social media, but our Facebook got hacked. So we're no longer, in case you guys missed that, our Facebook got hacked.
Yeah. So if you're trying to talk to us on Facebook, don't, because sorry. It's not me.
And if we're posting weird shit, it's not us. So there's that.
Mm. And you know, nobody works at Facebook, so there's nothing you can do about it. Once they disable you, it's just...
You're just disabled.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. So there's that. So make sure you go ahead and check out that panel. Our plan was to be there, which we announced for a few episodes. Honestly, guys, it's going to depend on my little nephew's football team. They actually might be going to the playoffs, which is a big deal. And if so, we will not be able to make the summit, which makes me really sad because we're really excited about it. There are some really good speakers. Jeff Brandis is there again this year. Senator Pizzo is going to be there. So,
and there's a lot of advocates and
like-minded
people in the rooms together talking about stuff. It's really interesting.
Just like the, you know, our show, we have an array of people from all sides of the aisle, and so left, right, up, down, everywhere around. So
we can all talk about reform.
Exactly. So speaking of reform, I know that we're bringing you some criminal justice news today. And it's so funny because Amanda and I got together before hitting the record button here, and we both actually pulled the same article.
Of all the articles in the world.
Yeah. So, and let me just start by saying ProPublica, the publication, has been really on point with everything that they have been writing, I would say, over the last few months. I mean, they've always put out good articles, but really focused on kind
of their investigative journalism is on point.
On point. That's what I wanted to say. So basically, the article talks about how anti-reform people, tough on crime people, and the fraternal order of police. And
police are against these what do they call them? Far left prosecutors or something.
Right. What was that other thing recently that they said was like a progressive?
It was on our last episode. I don't remember, but
yeah, yeah. Some progressive idea. And it's like, no, that's just like facts. Oh, like progressive idea that poor people are being locked up pre-trial. Mm. This is just a fact.
Yeah.
Just sure keep is. That fact going that with lower income people are locked up before trial. You can see examples in the news every day of who's literally locked up ahead of trial and who's not. So there's that. So anyways, that's basically what this article was about, was that like the Fraternal Order of Police, as well as some tough on crime. I don't like to like label right versus left, but so I'm not going to. But so there are certain groups that are pushing against any progressive prosecution or criminal justice reforms. An example that they gave that's been in the news kind of recently is under one progressive prosecutor, there is a homicide detective that has refused to testify at 9 murder trials and has not received
punishment,
any discipline. Like, that's part of your duty.
There was, I think it was in that article, 2 separate progressive prosecutors had quoted police what they had said on their body cams about them.
Yeah. Basically like, sorry, we can't do anything to help you. Just make sure to vote in your next election.
Yeah. And to make sure you vote in the recall election.
Yes.
Super fucked up.
Yeah. So one of the prosecutors they talked about was Kim Gardner, who we've discussed before.
Kim Gardner was campaigning for circuit attorney, and she was running focused on disproportionate frequency of arrest and police officers using force against the Black community. So she was elected based on that.
Yeah. Well, and that's the story with all of these prosecutors. So Larry Krasner, who we've talked about, who became the district attorney of Philadelphia. Chelsea Boden got booted out after a quote unquote recall election. We here in Florida have witnessed 2 progressive prosecutors be just straight up removed from office. And I love how the article talks about that in here. They talk about Andrew Warren specifically, how his was based on refusal to prosecute or alleged refusal to prosecute any abortion or gender related health care.
And those things weren't even crimes yet. When they
that well that and he just well that and then they moved to Monique Worrell, who there was really no reason other than the governor thought she was not prosecuting things
the way he wanted.
Yeah.
Which is insane, because she was elected. Yeah. They were elected.
Well, and one of the main things that we talk about is that prosecutors have a lot of discretion under the law. That's just the way it is. And so it's funny how that's never been an issue until now. Now we have an issue with prosecutors having so much discretion. So this one of the things that I liked about this article, too, is it talked about some of the statistics and studies that have gone on that showed crime is actually down. Murder was down. They talked about the prosecutor in Cook County, Illinois, which is Chicago, which you guys are probably familiar with because we talked so many times about that freaking Ida B. Wells apartment complex and how, you know, there's a history there of
corruption.
Corruption, racist policies, you know,
I was trying to find the police forum with them talking about the prosecutor Fox and how they changed her name to have 3 X's to sexualize her and called her Crimeisha.
Yes. Yes. I'm actually
super fucking racist.
Yeah. So
what the fuck?
Fox was elected in 2016 and she is the prosecutor for Cook County, which is where Chicago is located. And she basically received a lot of backlash from police. Basically, like you said, she was sexualized by the police union, making her last name instead of having 2 X's, having 3, as well as kind of
racist nicknames.
Yes. So.
And they even said that she was like affiliated to some gang or some shit.
Yes. Yeah. So just basically spreading lies and rumors. And all of these prosecutors basically talked about how if the police are not with you, they are against you. And so they anyways, this article talks about several progressive prosecutors. And it's interesting because we tell you guys, go out and vote, go see what people's positions are on criminal justice reform, what their policies are on mass incarceration, on reducing, you know, crimes, on all of that. And then, you know, you have things like this happen where people are duly elected and by the people that they're representing, and the police are giving backlash. So this article is actually titled "Police Resistance and Politics Undercut the Authority of Prosecutors Trying to Reform the Justice System." So that's an issue.
It's a huge issue.
It's an issue. So speaking of Chicago, we talked about not that long ago, Illinois becoming eliminating cash bail. Mm-hmm. And they did a specific study on the Cook County Jail. And they said that this is the
one.
It is, but it is in Cook County. And so ever since the implementation of the zero cash bail system, they did a study. The jail population is near a 40-year low.
Wow.
And so 40 years ago was the 80s.
Mm.
And that's really when the 60s and 70s, but 80s are when the crack epidemic took place. And so that's like, you know, so like Jim Crow was eliminated allegedly in the 60s, really. Mm-hmm. The end of the Jim Crow era, and really just converted to the justice system at that point. But anyway, so they talked about how this is the first time and the only time since the mid 80s that the jail population has dipped below 5,000.
Wow.
Other than a brief stretch during 2020 when they were trying to figure out COVID. But
mm-hmm.
So that is based on that cash bail elimination. And law enforcement agencies, of course, wanted to comment. They have argued that many of the people who are being released due to the elimination of cash bail would find new victims.
For their victimless crimes.
So just so we're clear, this is quoted from the article. The bail measure, dubbed the Pretrial Fairness Act by supporters, bars detention of defendants unless they are deemed to pose a significant safety or flight risk. So this law made Illinois the first U.S. state to remove money from decisions on whether to jail defendants before trial. That is cool. Now, one of the interesting things that I found is that it actually kind of backfires in a couple ways, which I was ignorantly not aware of. But one of the ways is that if you are now in jail for a crime that they deem does not fit in the zero cash bail system, there is no way to post a bond anymore. So in a lot of places, I guess, where they're seeing that this holds people longer includes domestic battery charges. So now that this law is in effect, the domestic battery defendants who once were able to post bond and get out quickly now remain in jail.
That feels like a flaw that can be fixed.
It does. But it's interesting because probably the people who are not wanting to fix it are the people who are probably against the act in the first place, because now they're seeing it as a way to hold people longer.
I mean, I understand that. However, and I could say this as a survivor of domestic violence, they should still be entitled to a bond.
Well, and that's what the Constitution says, too, is that people are entitled to bail. So it is interesting. So there is a little bit of backfire there. And then one of the other things that they are studying is they thought that the implementation of this act would increase the amount of electronic monitoring, so like ankle monitors, GPS monitors. Mm-hmm. But they have found that it is only increased by 0.6%. So what they are finding is that they believe that, quote, judges understand that electronic monitoring is not an acceptable alternative to jail, end quote. So this is the article, "With Cash Bail Eliminated in Illinois, Cook County Jail Population Shrinks," by Chip Mitchell, WBEZ.
Put it in the show notes.
Yes. Go ahead and send the link there.
So do you remember in September of last year when we talked about Ottawa County?
Maybe.
It's in Alabama, and
memory is being jogged.
They were policing women with addiction for endangering
being pregnant,
the unborn.
Yes. Okay.
We talked about that literally over a year ago. My mom sent me an article today.
Your mom, who is an avid listener of the show, which we love.
Yes. Hey, Mom.
Shout out, Mom.
An Alabama woman was imprisoned for endangering her fetus. She gave birth in a jail shower. And it's written by Sam Levin, and it was posted by The Guardian.
Their reporting is also really on point all the time.
Mm-hmm. It talks about Ottawa County and a girl named Ashley Caswell. I hope I pronounced that right. They were holding her on accusations that she had tested positive for methamphetamine while pregnant and endangering her fetus. She was 2 months pregnant at the time and became one of the growing numbers of women imprisoned in the county for not protecting their unborn child. I know you guys can't see me, but I keep making quotes about these unborn that have rights.
But not the actual women who are living, breathing here.
Right. So Caswell was denied regular access to prenatal visits, even though they were aware that she is a high-risk pregnancy due to hypertension and abnormal pap smears. According to a lawsuit filed on Friday against the county and the sheriff's department, she was also denied prescribed psychiatric medications and slept on a thin mat on a concrete floor in the detention center her entire pregnancy.
Good thing that they're protecting that unborn fetus.
Yeah, right. Protecting it real good. In October, when her water broke, she pleaded to be taken to the hospital, and her lawyer said that she was told to sleep it off and wait until Monday, 2 days later, to deliver her baby. During nearly 12 hours of labor, they gave her some Tylenol and allegedly told her to stop screaming.
Oh, my God.
And they kept telling her that she was not in full labor. She ended up losing amniotic fluid and blood and was alone and standing up in a jail shower when she ultimately delivered her child. She nearly bled to death. So after that, they took her to the hospital where she was diagnosed with placental abruption, which can kill you.
Oh.
The baby survived, and so did she. She was separated from the baby as soon as he was born.
Why?
Because she was a prisoner.
But wasn't she only a prisoner while they were, quote unquote, making sure this fetus was safe?
That's a great point. That is a really good point.
Because isn't that the whole point of, like, arresting them?
That is a really,
and keeping them in jail?
Good point.
So why are we still, I'm confused here. What is this law?
The lawsuit filed by the nonprofit group Pregnancy Justice and the Southern Poverty Law Center is the first case to challenge the conditions of jailed pregnant women in Ottawa County, which advocates are saying is ramping up its prosecutions, which obviously, because we were talking about this a year ago, data suggests that it's the national leader in arresting women under the guise of protecting their fetuses.
It's a great title. We are the national leader. They should put that on their billboard. Welcome to Ottawa County. We are the leader in jailing pregnant women.
Yeah. And making them give birth in a jail shower.
The fuck? It's very hypocritical law, it seems.
Yeah, it's fucked up.
If we are concerned about the care and well-being of the fetus, it seems like that purpose is defeat. I almost would take the meth over that.
Yeah.
You know? You know? I mean, that's probably an unpopular opinion, but... I don't know. Bodily autonomy, maybe, perhaps.
Yeah, I just can't.
I don't know. At least with the meth, she'd probably be going to the doctors.
Right.
Maybe. I don't know. But, you know.
Advocates say Caswell's experience shines light on a life-threatening mistreatment and neglect of pregnant women and what they can face behind bars. And they argue it exposes the consequences of the, quote, fetal parenthood movement, end quote, which seeks to legally define fertilized eggs, embryos, and fetuses as people.
Oh,
but
my
not
goodness.
The woman.
Which is, like, great if you want it to be that as the person who's developing that fetus. Uh-oh, I see her face.
Sorry, I was just trying to read ahead a little bit because I haven't finished this article. After she delivered her baby alone, she had lost consciousness. Stapp still refused to render aid and instead took photos of her. I'm sorry. I thought they took photos of her. It says her baby without consent. Either way, not cool, but I thought it was worse than it was.
Oh my God. It's still pretty bad.
It's still pretty bad. Gross.
For what? To say, like, look what we just...
Probably to be like, oh, fuck, she was in labor. What do we do? I don't know, though. Oh my God. When she returned to the jail from the hospital, staff denied her access to the prescribed breast pump and ibuprofen. Says Caswell, who has faced several chemical endangerment charges over the years, is now in state prison serving a 15-year sentence.
What?
She was convicted of Class C felony endangerment, which doesn't require evidence that the fetus was harmed, but merely exposed to substances.
Oh,
she got 15 great. Fucking years?
Wow.
I'm like,
shook. She was separated.
She had other kids, too. Pregnancy Justice reported this year that Alabama had the highest number of pregnancy criminalization cases in the country from 2006 to 2022 when Roe was overturned. The group logged 649 cases in which women in the state were arrested or faced criminal consequences in the name of protecting their fetuses or punished actions that authorities said endangered their pregnancies. That county has the highest rate of arrests in the state. 257 arrests of pregnant women and new mothers from 2015 to 2023.
So I'm curious what the elements are of this particular crime, because do you have to prove knowledge that you are pregnant? Also, can we just stop for a second? Let me back up even on that. Addiction is a disease. I think a large portion of people recognize that now, clearly not everybody. So a symptom of the disease is to use drugs. That's a symptom of the disease of addiction, the compulsion to use drugs. That's a symptom.
Mm-hmm.
So like people with like cancer or diabetes that have symptoms from their diseases that potentially cause adverse effects to like a developing embryo, like are we also arresting them?
Oh, good question.
Seems like a violation of the Americans with Disabilities Act, which is an avenue that has been being used particularly in drug courts to challenge those drug courts that will not allow medicaid-assisted treatment for opioid use disorders, such as Suboxone, Subutex, Methadone, Sublocade. So for those drug courts that are like not allowing those, there's been a lot of challenges under the Americans with Disabilities Act. And in those court cases, the Department of Justice has agreed that addiction does fit with under the definition of disability under the Americans with Disability Act. So I wonder if that law can be challenged. Anybody in Alabama who's like a civil lawyer or a federal lawyer in Alabama, suggestion.
Speaking of lawsuits, this suit cites that past cases of alleged neglect in the jail. In 2019, staff refused to take a woman to the hospital for 5 days after her water broke prematurely and she lost her baby. In 2022, another woman was allegedly forced to give birth alone without medical assistance or pain medication. Etowah County faced national scrutiny last year when a 23-year-old woman, this is the one we talked about last year, was arrested during a traffic stop after she disclosed to officers that she had smoked marijuana 2 days earlier, the day that she learned she was pregnant. In a separate lawsuit last year, alleged that the county had arrested a woman for chemical endangerment, alleging she was exposing her fetus to drugs, only to discover that she wasn't even pregnant.
Well, so that's what I mean. I'm like curious what the elements of this crime are, because it seems like it would be unconstitutionally vague if the I don't know. That's very... the whole thing's very odd.
The prosecutions fall under the Alabama law adopted in 2006 with the intent to protect children from hazardous meth labs. Women across the country have increasingly been jailed for pregnancy outcomes, including miscarriages and stillbirths.
Interesting.
God, the more I read into this article, the worse it gets.
Was there like a meth lab epidemic? I mean, it's Alabama. I'm sure there was, but...
Yeah.
But like, what?
They're blowing up in neighborhoods and shit.
I mean, what
do you remember when I lived in that neighborhood in the hood when the meth lab blew up around the corner from my house?
No.
Well, it was a rough neighborhood. But anyway, this article is really long and really scary. So I'm going to post it in the show notes. We're living in a hellscape.
At least in Handmaid's Tale, they took care of the women as they were giving birth.
Right.
Did you ever think that we would be starting a thing with, at least in Handmaid's Tale?
God.
Like, so what is happening?
If I don't laugh about it, I will literally die. So.
Bouncing back to jails and programs and cash bail and all of that, quite the contrary of what Illinois is doing with the cash bail. LA also, we talked about, because 50 Cent was against it, you know? Remember, yeah, which
the cities were going to be done or something, whatever.
Yeah, interesting. So Santa Clara County pilot program aims to stop repeat offenders by keeping them in jail. This is by Ian Cole, NBC Bay Area. So this is out in California, quite contrary to LA. So this talks about a pilot program in the Santa Clara County jail. Here we go. I'm going to use a lot of air quotes here.
We should start under, doing video. We've been using air quotes a lot.
Under the quote, new program, new, right? This is a new policy, Amanda. Arresting officers now offer judges an opinion on whether they think a person is a risk. For example, this is actually quotes from the article, real quotes. If they've arrested someone multiple times for theft, they can lay out why they believe the person should have a higher bail to help ensure they remain behind bars until their first court appearance. I like how this is piloted as a quote unquote new policy when this is what's been going on in the country since it's like inception. So
also, like, obviously the person who came up with this idea has never been hassled by the man before, because there's tons of cops that literally go after the same people. They see them and they're like, oh, let's see if this person's up to no good.
That is 100% true. That is 100% true. So the program was designed by the deputy DA, and she believes it will keep repeat offenders in jail longer and prevent them from committing more crimes. Isn't that literally the old age policy that's been in place? Like the country has thought, and now we're getting all this research that shows that that's absolutely not true. Mm. And it's interesting that this fucking airhead, sorry, whoever you are, lady, like, is like, oh, I have this new idea. Like, if we keep people in jail longer, it'll deter them from committing crimes. That's like the opposite of what we're learning. And in fact, that's not a new idea, lady. That's like just what they've always done. So, like, first of all, you're an airhead because it's not new. Second of all, you're an airhead because we actually are gaining more and more evidence by the day that that's not true. So,
and also, do they want these cops to like come to court?
Right. So the public defender's office there spoke up saying, here's a brilliant idea. Holding people longer doesn't work. Public defenders would know, because they encounter the public that is being jailed every day. Mm-hmm. And they believe the project is, quote, ill-conceived. And they also argue that it violates a Supreme Court decision from 2 years ago that requires courts to find the least restrictive alternative to incarceration. And Raj Jayadev, sorry, with Silicon Valley Debug, which pushes for criminal justice reform, says, quote, I think the entire aim of the policy is really just to increase incarceration of poor people, namely homeless people, people with mental health issues. And he argues that basically this puts a lot in the hands of police and not judges. And, you know, judges are elected to do their job and look at all of these things, and that the decisions that these police are making are outside of their purview. You know, they make the arrest and then they're put into the court system. And then from that point, the lawyers and the judges are supposed to make decisions.
I'm sorry, but a lot of people don't trust cops, me included. So that's alarming.
Yeah. So it is a pilot program that runs to the end of the year. And then the police and the DA will then determine if it was effective. So, like, I'm not really, like, looking forward to the results that are determined by the police and the DA. They don't even have a neutral board that's going to determine whether this policy is effective. Like, are you serious? So anyways, this will also be in the show notes. Make sure to follow Santa Clara County and their pilot program. See how it works.
We're living in a hellscape.
And lastly, I just wanted to talk about something that has come up in our Twitter feed from a lot of people that we follow, as well as some advocates that we speak with closely. And I believe they're also going to be talking about it at the summit this upcoming weekend. So there's actually an article produced by the Florida Phoenix by Mitch Perry, who we met last year at the summit. Florida Corrections Secretary says some canteen prices in prisons too high, working on reducing costs. So they give several examples of how much ramen is. It's like over a dollar for a pack of ramen. They talk about how the agency just signed a five-year, $175 million contract with a private company to provide commissary. And they're the ones who set the prices, not the Department of Corrections. So, for example, it's $1.06 for one pack of ramen noodles. A two-pack of two AA batteries is $1.25 at a dollar store, and $3.30 in prison. A popular frozen chicken fried sandwich goes for $4.99. but it costs incarcerated persons $6.19. In response, Secretary Dixon, Mr. Dixon, has said that basically it's not their job to compete with places like Walmart or Walgreens on prices, but they are seeing the reason for the outcry and they are going to work with their private company to try and bring down some of the prices on some of the items. So, oh, another example is a 16.9 ounce bottle of water. They actually compared this to another prison in Texas. So in Texas, this bottle of water cost 26 cents. You want to guess, you want to do prices right for what it costs in Florida? Everybody give me an answer. If it's 26 cents in Texas,
$1.99.
No, you lose prices right because you went over. I went but over. $1.15. So anybody still. Who guessed closest without going over, give yourself a pat on the back. So anyway, so that is a major issue in Florida right now. You know, everybody's experiencing inflation around the world, by the way, which,
well,
in case anybody was curious.
Also in Florida, they don't let family members send money for the canteen without being approved on a visitor list. And then they don't approve your application for 6 months plus. We should talk about this sometime, but I can go on forever. And I know we don't have time for that tonight.
All right. Well, there you have it, guys. Back with the legal brief. We are so excited to be kind of talking about those types of things. We know you guys like to be up on issues, and so we like to rant about them as well. So we will put all of those articles in the show notes. Make sure you check them out, read them. They're much more detailed than what we get into, and you can get enraged with us.
We get a little ranty sometimes and off the wall. So if you want to read those articles, they'll be in the show notes.
Yep, absolutely. All right, guys, we will see you next time on Gin and Justice.
All editing for Gin and Justice done by Gin and Justice Podcast.
Artwork by Justin Cardone. Photography by Kimber Schwakey.
We'll see you next time on Gin and Justice.